Welcome to the Money Maze podcast. I'm Simon Brewer, and Will Campion and I have created this show to explore and unravel some of the mysteries surrounding the investment business. We hope through direct and insightful interviews with masters of the real-life money maze, we're going to learn about different approaches to allocating capital, making investment and business decisions, and navigating the pitfalls that line the paths to prosperity. Whether you're a current or aspiring investor, entrepreneur, professional, or a student exploring career options, we hope you gain some helpful insights and enjoy the shows. You can keep up to date by visiting moneymazepodcast.com, and please sign up to our newsletter to ensure you won't miss a release. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe, and we'd love you to tell a friend or colleague about it. Thank you for listening. We're delighted to have Schroders as a sponsor and corporate partner. Schroders is a global investment manager whose purpose is to provide excellent investment performance through active decision-making. For more than two centuries, Schroders has evolved their understanding of markets, offering investment solutions across fixed income, equities, multi-asset, as well as private markets through Schroders Capital. Schroders actively invests in companies with responsible and durable business models. They're also a leading specialist in impact investing for clients who want to maximize positive change. Capital is at risk with investing. Bremont is also a sponsor of the Money Maze podcast. Bremont is a British company based in Henley that was established 20 years ago by two young brothers whose dream was to design and engineer beautiful chronometers. When Giles English, one of those brothers, appeared as a guest on the Money Maze podcast last year, he brought to life the wonderful history of British watchmaking, helping to explain why the world sets its time by Greenwich Mean Time, and he captured the incredible challenge of mastering the complexities involved in making exquisitely engineered timepieces. He has said, "Never judge one of our watches until you've held it in your hand and felt the quality." And both Will Campion and I have bought a watch, and we love them. Great innovation, a tangible love for their mission, resulting in beautiful, world-class luxury wristwatches. Founded in Chicago, Illinois in 1889, Northern Trust has been evolving from a fiduciary and custodial institution into a leading provider of asset, wealth, and banking solutions to investors worldwide. So to examine its current thrust and approach to asset management, I'm delighted to welcome Marie Dzanis, Head of Northern Trust Asset Management for Europe, Middle East, Africa. Marie, welcome to the Money Maze podcast.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Simon.
Before we dive into the asset management activities of Northern Trust, let's please step back, because I've read that your father, who served in the Second World War, found himself holding a man who died in his arms. And it was so significant for him that after the war, he entered a Benedictine monastery, was a monk for almost a decade, and took a vow of silence for 4 years. So I guess my first question is, how did that impact your upbringing?
Well, that was a profound impact. I had wonderful parents growing up that were very values-based. They were great examples to me. And as you said, after seeing death and dying and things that are momentous, it really caused him to reflect on what's important in life. So he was about discipline, education, philosophical things. We would talk about beauty, truth, and goodness, the transcendentals, while other people were having normal dinner conversations. They were saying, "How was your day, dear?" while we were arguing about the existence of God over the dinner roast. He left the monastery and my mother started a business with him. He was the owner and my mom was the president. So I learned early on about many lessons, but the importance of co-contribution, how important women in leadership can be. I've learned lessons like life is short and being reflective on the war caused me at 37 years of age to write my own eulogy so I could live my life backwards according to what my values are. And one of the things too that was quite profound was my father spoke to me as I was growing up like anyone else and not like a child or didn't treat me as a girl. He would always have candid conversations on things he was thinking about and reflecting upon. And so I always encourage men, you have no idea the exponential impact you have by spending real time with your daughter. And being able to just have that relaxed time, I remember we'd go fishing and he would tell me about the important lessons in life. But lastly, I would say what I took away from him was fill your cup. And so there's three things that I do in life because of him. I fill the heart, the head, and grow the wingspan. The heart caused me to look at philanthropic interests that my husband and I have. The head is about having professional coaches every year and really having stretch on my own initiative. I'll try and learn a different craft and try and do something different. And then the wingspan, being able to take on more and really push myself out of my comfort zone. So I've learned a lot from a great man and great parents.
Well, thank you for that. Now, you could have walked in many directions. So of course, why finance?
It was very interesting journey because I graduated university, and while I had friends who were going to law school and they knew exactly what they were going to do, I actually talked to my father and he said, you should probably be in finance. And I wound up cold calling my first job. I was living in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, went to university in Washington, D.C., and got through all the gatekeepers and spoke to the president of the company. And I said, hi, my name is Marie. I want a job. He said, who is this? How did you get through all these gatekeepers? And he said, can you be here tomorrow? So I wound up, my first job was in sales, as you can imagine. Back then, I had very little in training, but wound up in municipal and fixed income sales as one of my first jobs.
So two of those large firms you work for, BlackRock and JP Morgan Asset Management, what did those institutions teach you?
Many things. If you think about it, starting in the business in 1989, it was a very different scenario. Wall Street, it looked very different. And I always knew I had a calling to lead people and get the best out of them. And one of the things that I wanted to do was make sure that their business results were something that were personally rewarding, that aligned with their values, that the firms that I worked for had a clear value statement and they walked the talk. And the biggest belief, especially being here at Northern Trust for 10 years, very happy, Northern Trust Asset Management especially has shown me along the way that your personal values and your professional values can coexist.
Well, 10 years on, that probably is more obvious to you. But going back 10 years, Northern Trust, a name more synonymous with custody and asset servicing, it wasn't an obvious choice, was it?
It was an interesting interview process because I had met my boss, Chandran Thomas, and went through the gauntlet of meeting leadership, strategy, vision, interviews, and the like. And my final conversation with Chandran, I just knew that he was someone that I would want to work for and work with. He talked about values and leadership. And what's interesting is all business has direction, challenge, accountability. They need to get results. But if you can do it alongside of people that share a common goal and a common vision and feel empowered and feel that your voice matters in an organization, if you feel as a person that you can be effective in an organization, I spent a lot of time up front understanding how my contribution would be heard and whether or not it would be valued. And that's what made the decision for me to join Northern Trust.
So you're responsible for all of the asset management business in the region, and that includes governance, strategy, portfolio management, business development, talent. I mean, that makes you a very busy lady. But talk about the priorities for your business.
So we do run an end-to-end asset management business here in EMEA. I live here in London and work with an amazing team of people who have built a wonderful foundation. And being intimately aware and managing multiple lines of business in the US, becoming more commercial, like you said, bring the very best capabilities to bear. So I got here 4 years ago, learned the wonderful existing relationships that we had with clients. Now, our firm and one of our competencies is working with ESG strategies. We've been doing this for 30 years.
Staying with the discussion around ETFs, I know that you have an ETF which focuses on climate change, and I understand that embodied within that is something you call a vector score. Now, please illuminate me.
We launched 5 ETFs in 2021, and climate risk has been something that has been in our capital market assumptions for many years now. And our investors are certainly focused on getting a solution in their portfolio that is highly liquid and transparent and easy to trade. So they wanted to have an ETF. So when we created our ETFs to include a climate focus and have a carbon reduction, we used our Northern Trust Asset Management Vector Score to help in the methodology. Now, part of this is a very distinct tool that we use. And what it does is it leverages a myriad of data, but things like materiality understanding using SASB, which is Sustainable Accounting Standards, along with TCFD, which for a future look of climate risk in a portfolio alongside of other data, creates a process and discipline that is very distinct in the marketplace. And then also another thing that we've been known for in the region, of course, in our firm, is working with quant active strategies.
One of the things that noted as I read Northern Trust materials was the continued reference to the fact that as an institution, you were known as a fiduciary for a very long time. And it's not a word that's often employed. Why is that important for you?
Well, if you think about institutional firms, typically create institutional products and retrofit them for maybe intermediary or retail investors. Northern Trust as a firm 130 years ago started off as responsible for someone's money. They were a trust. They had very deep client relationships and understood fiduciary before that was ever in vogue. So imagine an organization that creates products with that in mind. They're thinking about the experience of the client. Does the product do what it says it's going to do? Does the product have high integrity? And if I think about, since I've been here, all the different instances where we left products on the cutting room floor to say that it didn't meet the standard that we were expecting, that takes great discipline. Because as you know, product manufacturing takes a lot of investment and time and research. And to get further down that pathway and say, we're going to walk away because it's not the standard, really does require discipline, which is something that resonates with me personally.
We had Robin Wigglesworth on the show from the FT, who has written Trillions, and he talks about the dominance, the oligopoly of the passive industry, and yet you are trying and are making inroads there. So let's talk about this ETF world within Northern Trust. You've labeled it FlexShares. What are you trying to do, and why have you named it FlexShares?
So FlexShares is about having an active design around a concept and a variety or flexibility in outcomes. FlexShares is our ETF lineup for Northern Trust Asset Management, and it had 10 years success in the U.S., passing $20 billion in assets, being one of the largest fund complexes. And bringing it here to EMEA is a paramount thing for us. So most recently, we did launch the listed private equity UCITS ETF, which is FLPE. There's a lot of different private equity interest in the marketplace, but people want access to this. So the ETF offers a liquid solution. And by putting this in a portfolio, you're enabled to have complete transparency of the holdings, have liquidity and flexibility to be able to implement as you see fit. We're seeing institutions that are looking for this to augment what they're doing in their portfolios, but we're also seeing interest in the intermediary space as well.
So can we just take that private equity and just go down a level? If you end up owning it and you look through it, tell me, what do you see? Do you see a series of underlying private equity funds? Because Northern Trust presumably is not the manager themselves of each of those PE funds.
So we worked with Foxbury to help us create an index identifying underlying companies that are doing PE. We understand which to purchase in the index and what would be the successful ranking of them. Having that score, which is quite innovative in and of itself. One of the greatest things about ETFs is that being highly liquid, they have a bid and an ask and are available on the open market at all times. And it's the supply and demand. And I encourage people to think about the ETF construct itself. It is a container for the investment strategy. So that really does help create transparency and understanding for the investor, especially during times of market volatility, that they can see their pricing and they know what the underlying holdings are at any time during the day.
Let's talk about the difference between ETFs in Europe versus the US. I understand at a high level, we've got nuances and we've got different regulations, but what does it mean for investors in Europe buying an ETF versus the US?
The US marketplace is very different because think about the United States has 50 states, but they're all under the same regulation. And if you think about the European Union, each country could have its own different regulation, reporting requirements, and expectations. And trading across all of those different countries or serving a different marketplace requires an intimate understanding of what those investors need, how you can access them, even language translation. I was saying earlier about how perhaps Nordics and Netherlands might be very well advanced in ESG types of investments. We work with them on strategies around Paris-aligned benchmarks in Amsterdam. So they're very focused on how they can implement in stages to get to a net zero carbon target by 2050. If I look at, say, Sweden, they are looking to target 2045 by being net zero. And so that nuance is only 5 years, but it makes a very big difference on how you would create products and serve them and implement in different portfolios. So this involves the credibility on the ground, people in local markets, and a lot of expertise serving across multiple needs.
So it's clear to me that Northern Trust is building out quite specific expertise, as you've talked about, in quant active, in these ETFs. But I wonder, when you sit and look at the unfolding landscape for investment management generally, how do you think it will look in 5 to 7 years from now?
Well, as it relates to sustainable investing, I believe that it will just be part of what we do. And if I think globally, the United States and China in particular have the most change that they would undergo could profoundly impact the world on their contribution for sustainable investing. But I would say 10 years from now, it's just part of what we do. The next thing that is a very important trend that will be part of our day-to-day life is generational investing. I do believe that this younger generation, as we think of wealth transfer, the largest wealth transfer that's going to take place by the year 2035, this group of individuals will be voting and investing with their values. And so that will impact our landscape, which brings us to a culmination of how are we going to serve them? And that's where I think digital is going to have the most profound impact. Digital, meaning a myriad of investment solutions in model delivery, accessing a client-integrated, full-service, customized approach online.
Well, I hope you're enjoying this episode so far. We've got lots more to come. But a quick word on our new sponsor. Last year, I interviewed Gary Boom, CEO of Bordeaux Index. Wine is a great love of mine, and as he explained, Bordeaux Index has become a major disruptor in the way that wine is bought and sold, and has sought to redefine the way a wine merchant works. I've been really impressed with their business, and have been buying wine from them since that interview. So we're delighted that the Money Maze podcast is now also sponsored by LiveTrade, their world-leading fine wine trading platform. LiveTrade has changed the way fine wine is bought and sold worldwide. You can instantly buy and sell or place bids and offers on key wines from Bordeaux, Champagne, Italy and other world regions. Their two-way pricing offers guaranteed trading liquidity with no fees. So I recommend you have a look at their website, bordeauxindex.com/LiveTrade. The Money Maze podcast is also brought to you by our final sponsor, Mintos. The world of art investing has been typically out of reach for most investors, and yet returns have been very impressive. Mintos is a new concept in art investing, giving investors the chance to own the unownable through an FCA-authorized and regulated fractionalization platform, which offers access to iconic and rare paintings from contemporary art masters like Warhol, Kondo, Francis Bacon and Basquiat. Actual paintings, not digital assets. For investors seeking to diversify their portfolios through an asset class historically uncorrelated with stock market investing and with strong returns, we've been impressed with Mintos and think it merits a closer look. So one of the questions I don't think we've ever discussed is that of custody and how it's changing. And of course, Northern Trust roots, as we've said, are in custody. You are one of the world leaders in it. With blockchain's arrival, with digitization, what's going to happen to custody?
That's one of the reasons why Northern Trust has thought ahead of the curve to be able to accommodate clients with needs who are looking to have crypto assets held in custody. Having the flexibility of a firm with such strength and roots and knowledge of working in the asset servicing arena.
Do you think the investment community understand what your business is today?
I think we have some very notable accolades in EMEA. And because we've worked with institutional investors for such a long time, and a lot of the significant investors do know us. So we serve sovereign wealth, we serve pensions, we serve very large asset owners and the like. And some of those things that you may not commercially know about us, but certainly I'd love to share with you, is that Northern Trust Asset Management manages 5 of the 10 largest ESG funds globally. We manage the largest ESG fund in Europe. We were just announced as one of the top 4 largest ESG launches in 2021 for a size of a fund. As investors engage with us, they hear about all the capabilities that we have, that we're one of the largest indexers in the world, for example, or that we have this longevity and expertise and capability in cash and liquidity solutions, and that our performance was top quartile throughout all of COVID, which during a time of market volatility for liquidity products has been a challenge for the industry. Those types of things are a lovely surprise to engage with the audience if you don't know.
You've cited a Harvard study that revealed women on average need 100% certainty before they take on more responsibility, while on average men need only 30. How do you encourage appropriate risk taking by those who seek more certainty?
Great question. I personally believe that people need to, at their own time, get a coach and push themselves out of the comfort zone. I believe in this, and I love to support people taking calculated risks. And one of the things that I like to do is believe in unconstrained thinking. Because when you ask somebody, hey, Simon, I'd like you to work on a project. What's the budget for it? What's the limitations? And then you're going to think inside that box. I like to have the discipline and encourage my leaders to think, if you could solve this problem in any possible way without constraints, what would that be? And believe it or not, it's interesting, when you are unencumbered by limitations, you get to the right solution. So interestingly enough, I have written up on my wall, what would you do differently if you knew you couldn't fail? What would you try if you knew you couldn't fail? And when we think like that, we can have courage to come to the right solution. Now, regarding gender, what I always encourage women to do, or ethnic minorities, or somebody who's working on gaining the confidence, is to have 3 coaches in their life. One is a cheerleader, saying at all times, keep going, great job, stick in there. 2 is having somebody with a good gut check, someone that you can trust to double check if you make a decision and is it the right thing. And the 3rd is always have somebody mentor you who thinks very differently than you. It is that one person in the room that you're kind of like, why did they say that? I don't get that. Pause, notice that reaction, and say, what is that person thinking differently from me? Because as you noted, if we want to have diversity and have people take more risk, they need to understand and be able to influence. And by having an understanding and privacy to act in a mentor relationship where you can understand how different people think, it's a great tool to help people gain confidence and understand how they can operate effectively in all different types of circumstances.
I see that a recent survey by Heidrick & Struggles found that among the world's 50 biggest asset managers, only 3% of the chief executives are women, and only 4% of heads of region, of which you are one. We've had a lot of very successful women on the Money Maze podcast, and I think I'm right in saying that last year, over 50% of your hires were women. And I quote you, you say it's hand-to-hand combat every single day. I sense a little bit of hyperbole, but just give me the context.
The only way things are going to get done is if they're measured and people are accountable. And fortunately, I work with people who see the value. My executive team sees the value of bringing in people with different perspectives and experiences, not just cognitive diversity, but does appreciate ethnic and gender diversity as well. And by having people who are truly willing to engage in the conversations to understand when there's a break in why somebody doesn't appreciate difference in value, that vulnerability and that willingness to engage is important. So what does that do? It enables us to have a diverse slate of candidates, diverse slate of interviewers, talk about on a regular and open basis how we're doing to not only bring diversity in the door, but can they be empowered? Do they have a voice? Look at trends in not only hiring, but how people get promoted. Be open to having different viewpoints. And let me not underestimate how different that might be for some firms to have varying viewpoints, not theirs, at the executive table, not only contributing, but having say and having the ability to influence decisions. And to operate in an environment and as a leader and have my executive embrace that, that's a win. Because we get more open-minded, we think more playfully, we get creative, we start thinking in places we haven't thought of, and we get better outcomes. And we all know that companies that are in the top quartile for both ethnic and gender diversity outperform their peers by 35%. And so if we embrace this as an industry, we'll get more and more of better and different.
Great advice. We have a lot of students who listen to this show. The Money Maze podcast also runs an ambassador program for mostly students to join us for 6 months, and we help them learn about the business and they help us. And related to that, I have read that you have, when it comes to hiring, you have three deal breakers. What are they and why?
We believe as a firm, you know, having things like passion, competence, and intellectual curiosity, and diversity, and humility. And for an investment manager to have humility, that means you've got to be willing to say, hey, we're not going to get everything right all the time, or we do better as a team instead of having a star manager. But bringing somebody into the organization, it's my obligation and my executive's obligation to make sure that they have success. So number one is integrity. Does somebody do the right thing when nobody's looking? Do they really do the right thing? Or do they try to? Number two is drive. I want somebody who has passion and gets a kick out of what they do every day. They'll tend to read up on their craft. They'll tend to be playful. They'll take calculated risks. They'll be curious. They'll have intellectual curiosity around what they do. And number three is execution. And while that's the mandate, having very smart people in an organization could err on the side of having analysis paralysis. It's being able to balance that taking action with the right type of analytical skills and the right type of capabilities. So finding those people who have the right spirit and values, those would be my three deal breakers. And so far, I've been very fortunate that if you surround yourself with great people, all boats rise.
Very clear and very good advice. I'm going to ask you some general questions. We had Dave Yarrow on the show, who's become one of the world's, if not most successful photographer, having been a hedge fund manager. And he talked about everyone needs a hero. Now, I read about your hero, Ernest Shackleton. I also found the advert that was originally posted when he was looking for the men to join him on endurance. And this is what it said. It said, men wanted for dangerous expedition, low wages for long hours of arduous labor under brutal conditions, months of continual darkness and extreme cold, great risk to life and limb from disease, accidents and other hazards, small chance of fame in case of success. Well, not like investment banking or investment management. Why is he your hero?
I love the Ernest Shackleton story because that is really talking about leadership during crisis. And when you think about how he was able to lead a crew of 26 individuals through a tragic event of getting his ship stuck in ice floes and having them survive almost 2 years in dire conditions. One of the things that was examined over the course of the many books that were written about him was his leadership capabilities. And so COVID as being a crisis is a great example of having to navigate through challenge. And I draw upon that from the angle of keeping people focused during times of uncertainty and times of crisis is a key to success. Being able to know when to work, when to celebrate, when to cry, when to plan, when to enjoy, eat. This is all part of being able to say, we don't know what is going to happen, but we're going to take control of what we do know. We're going to ask the right questions. We're going to create the situation that we can solve the problem together. And it also involves a community of engagement. And I think this is a wonderful case study because as a leader, being able to get everyone out safely and getting them home safely through the most dire conditions is really encouraging for us. And I look to a number of different incredible leaders and especially my team, my partners around the table, being able to not know what's going to happen next and be able to have the confidence to manage together through uncertainty, I think is a wonderful example.
Tell me, what's your most important daily habit?
I have Zen time that I take a step back and give myself space to really think. Believe it or not, something that you might not know about me is I'm a mildly expressed introvert. But I have worked hard for 32 years and worked with coaches to really put myself out there and have body language experts to push myself. But I'm highly analytical and I like to reflect. And I do very well if I prepare or reflect or relax and give myself the space so that when I'm with someone, I'm fully present. They have me, my full attention, and I'm on.
Wow, I'm not sure I've ever met a mildly expressed introvert before. I hope there are more of you. My next question, if you could just tell us one thing.
If I could just tell one thing, it's all the things in totality that make someone great, that makes a team great, that makes a business great. And I do know that we look for the easy fix or the silver bullet to solve problems. But taking a step back and reflecting on all the little pieces and the hard work and the community and the village that it takes to win, those are the things that are the sweetest part of the journey. And so in effort to say something profound and say, do this, really enjoying what you do in every step of the day and who you do it with, I think, in my opinion, is the one thing I would tell people.
Great. And finally, if you could have a dinner guest of your choice, who would it be and where would you have it?
Oh, I'd probably have my father.
Fantastic. So I've really enjoyed this conversation and you have been very illuminating about Northern Trust and its asset management activities. There are lots of things that I wrote down. I always like to summarize some of the lessons. But the two that are going to stand out is what would you do differently if you knew you couldn't fail? I think that's very powerful. And when you started, you said something which resonated as well, which is the importance of filling your cup. And I think that, again, is great advice to anybody of any age. So with that, Marie, I'm going to thank you again very much for appearing on the Money Maze podcast and for being here today.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you for listening to the Money Maze podcast. For more information or to subscribe, please visit themoneymazepodcast.com. Hope to see you next time. All content on the Money Maze podcast is for your general information and use only, and is not intended to address your particular requirements. In particular, the content does not constitute any form of advice, recommendation, representation, endorsement, or arrangement, and is not intended to be relied upon by users in making any specific investment or other decisions. Guests and presenters may have positions in any of the investments discussed.